this was digital wayfinding for an updated evolution of the wayfinding experience throughout the Washington Metro system, building a new graphic language that could account for real-time information alerts and changing information that would ultimately support the static signage that we see throughout Metro.
Welcome to Journey with Purpose, episode 31. I'm your host, Randy Plummel. Hey, Garrett, when we say digital wayfinding, what do we mean?
A digital wayfinding is information on a screen that is helping you get to where you need to go. A lot of the times that's used as a supporting element to static signage, so signs that are out in the environment. Digital tools and digital screens and information can only show up where those screens are, so they're a little bit more limited in that way, but they can be a really helpful supportive tool in that they change and can update for real-time information. Digital wayfinding is the malleable tool in the wayfinding experience.
That was designer Garrett Corcoran. He is of the Brooklyn-based Order. We're going to speak to him in a little bit, but buckle up since we're going to talk about something you might use every day when you get on or off the subway, and that's digital wayfinding. We're going to go deeper into Washington Metro's new digital wayfinding tools. The last episode, episode 30, we spoke with Professor Zachary Schrag about the origins of Washington, D.C.'s Metro Rail. And here's a snippet of Professor Schrag describing architect Harry Weiss's vision for the stations.
If this is going to be a subway for the federal city, it should look great. The end product was a visually spectacular design of these 600-foot long arched vault stations. He did not want to cover up the concrete with some kind of marble or paint or anything else. So this was a way for Weiss to get multiple functions out of a single structure and to reduce the clutter. This becomes very important in Metro's history, that one of the challenges of the Weiss design is it was minimalist. He did not want a lot of signage. He did not want a lot of clutter. He had seen that in London and didn't like it.
Washington Metro opened up in the bicentennial year of 1976, almost 50 years ago. And in those 50-odd years, our understanding of wayfinding, that's helping people move about the system, and our digital tools have changed. They've evolved. Today, we're going to talk about how we can insert new technology while being true to the original design guidelines that have worked so well. But first, if we haven't met, I'm a former architect who owns a small but mighty public sector-focused design shop called Expedition Works. Expeditions are just journeys with purpose, and we help organizations get to where they need to go. Okay, enough of that. Hey, Garrett, welcome to the show. Tell us who you are, where we're speaking to you from, and what do you do?
Thanks for having me. I am Garrett Corcoran. I'm a graphic designer. Right now, I'm in Salt Lake City, Utah, traveling, but I'm based in New York, and I work as design director for a design office in Brooklyn called Order.
What is Order?
Order is a graphic design office. We specialize in usually identity design, but kind of everything that might encompass. So brand systems, editorial design, motion languages, posters, animation, sort of everything under the sun, wayfinding definitely included in that. But we really use identity as our window into all of those different areas. So we think about everything really from the core idea that informs everything that the design needs to take on.
One of the projects that I was really inspired by you and your office's work was the digital wayfinding at the Washington Metropolitan Area Transit Authority. But it's Metro, right? That's what everyone calls it. Or WMATA. Or I don't even know what how people say that acronym, but I always think of it as Metro Trains in DC. When you started, what was the problem that they were asking you to solve?
We said WMATA internally, just for the record. This project was a part of a larger effort to update the wayfinding experience within the Metro ecosystem. So we were just one firm in a trio of three, and our focus was just on the digital. And through that project, we were asking a lot of bigger questions around the success or the kind of challenges of wayfinding within Metro. And we tackled questions like language, both languages that show up on the signs, but also is there a way that we can add language that gives a passenger more context? So are they moving into the city, out of the city, north, south? So there were a lot of those different, kind of pieces on the table as a part of this project. But our focus was on the digital experience. And I think within that, our focus was in two bigger sections, right? And one of them was a reflection of those information questions. So what information do riders need? When do they need it? What are they looking at? What are they missing from the current kind of signage? And then the second part was taking all of that information and building a really cohesive digital system. So that wasn't something that necessarily existed for WMATA at the time. So we needed to build a new toolkit to account for all that information and do it in a way that was cohesive across all of the different touch points throughout the station.
As a New Yorker, you know, we love the subway. As New Yorkers, oftentimes we're very local and we think that ours is the best. But the Washington Metro is incredibly beautiful. There's the concrete structures of the stations by Harry Weiss and the graphic design system by Massimo Vignelli, who was also part of the Unimark team who helped do the refresh in New York. To me, when I think about the Washington Metro, it seems complete. But as we all know, the way we use Metro and subway has been changing. The way we get around the city now is changing because we have these supercomputers in our pockets now. What was it like stepping into this history and stepping into these new challenges?
It was daunting, as I'm sure you can imagine. The two pieces you just mentioned are truly iconic pieces of design that have done so much to influence projects outside of their own. I think in their respective fields, they're incredibly influential. So that's a big challenge to consider those. And I think with our system, that was a very primary focus of what we were doing. So we built the system really with a very intense consideration for each of those elements. And our goal was ultimately to build on the success of each of them. They do work and they have worked, and that's not something that we should discredit through this project. So we were really not trying to add a new voice to the system so much as just expand on what was already there and bring it into a new space with the kind of digital world. We really just wanted to reflect and echo what was already there and expand it only where we needed to and not do anything unnecessary, but really think about it from an essential standpoint and just build on those tools.
Sometimes as designers, I feel like constraints and existing context is actually better than a blank page because you give designers no boundaries and it can kind of be a disaster sometimes because we're not artists, right? We have to ship things. And so I wonder if the work by Vignelli, who's so exacting, if that was an easier way to extend and to grow it into a system that didn't exist in the 60s when Metro came to life.
And I think you're exactly right in that we aren't artists and design is built to serve a purpose and serve a function. That's very consistent in our approach at Order, and that depth of research influences everything that we do. And this project was a very true to form example of that. And the Vignelli system being so gridded and elemental or fundamental, I guess, in the way that it was built, in some ways made our job feel like a natural evolution of it because we are working with those very basic ingredients, and those ingredients were designed to evolve over time. And when we took up the mantle of it, there wasn't a lot that we changed from those core ingredients. We kept things like the brand and the typography. We really were just seeking to adapt those things to the screen and adding pieces that we need and things that didn't exist then, accounting for the digital nature of things and that it can change and that it can expand. So those were all new pieces, but again, they're all built from that really strong foundation of the Vignelli work.
If we get off a Metro train and we walk onto the platform with those beautiful mid-century hexagon tiles and there's the lit up coffer ceilings up above and we see this digital screen, can you describe it so we could see it in our mind's eye? What are we looking at?
You're looking at a black screen intentionally. It's something that's dark. It's not meant to jump out at you, but hopefully you're just seeing the text and the information on it. As you stare at it a little bit more, you'll notice the hierarchy is built from familiar shapes that you would see in the station. So as you look at the ceiling, there's this sort of rounded rectangle that can pattern a lot of the stations. That was a piece that we brought into our digital system. So hopefully you're seeing a lot of consistent elements that you've already experienced throughout the station, just in a little bit more of a reserved way on the screen. And you're just seeing the next arriving train or maybe a station's ahead map or something like that. That's just telling you where you need to go. And the hope is that it just feels like a natural extension of your journey, wherever you may be headed.
I think what's interesting here is creating an extensible system that could flow and be united throughout a system, which if you think about the system, it has some repeating elements, but a lot of the stations can be very unique and can have their little idiosyncrasies, be it transfer stations or they're outside. Can you talk a little bit about the design process and how you went about trying to make sure that you could create that consistency as people flow from the beginning to the end of their journey?
Our process started with a full immersion of the system, right? We spent a lot of time reading through its history. We spent a lot of time digging through some of the research work that had been done. WMATA being around for such a long time, they have a lot of really great resources to catch us up to speed with how people move through the system. Then, of course, we spent our own time there to get that kind of firsthand accounting of the system, moved through all of the different stations, and the WMATA team were really great pointing us to ones that they felt were the best representations of challenges that the system might face or very different touch points.
Was there a favorite station you had or some station that you're like, oh, this is so wacky or different that you're designing for that station?
That's a great question. I want to say my two favorite stations are probably the ones I spent the most time at, which would be LaFont and Metro Center. And I loved those stations because of the complexities in them, the way that people moved through them, the transfers that show up in those places. They were really unique. The architecture of the space in those stations, but really everywhere throughout the Metro system is just, it's truly incredible. And I think as a New Yorker who spends time in a very different subway, it's really captivating to go to a place that is different and is really considered from the top down. I think one of the biggest and most impressive pieces of the system is its consistency from station to station. The architecture obviously does change. And I think especially as you get to outdoor stations, there are a lot of different things at play. But there really is a consistent look and feel and atmosphere to those stations. The total experience of it is truly incredible.
I was speaking to Peter Lloyd, who is a map expert, and he made the interesting point about DC and New York at some point had a very geometric diagram map of the system. And then New York went back to this mishmash, more geographic centered map. Mm-hmm. We had this really interesting discussion about which one's good or which one's better. The answer is it depends. I always wonder if because the consistency of Washington Metro stations, you need that stronger or more clear signage to tell you where you are. Since if you know the New York system, you can sort of tell different stations by how they look. There's some colorations, there's some tiling difference. The complexity of it is different. I wonder if that change went into any design decision you all made to bring the digital wayfinding to life.
Absolutely. I think consistency is a really important part of the experience, but there are some slight downsides to it in that a lot of those stations look the same. And if you've never been there before, if you're a tourist and traveling here for the first time, that might be a slightly more disorienting aspect of the system. So one thing that we did as far as the digital wayfinding was try and make the text that you see when you get off of the train very apparent and very clear. So you at least have some sort of information anchor. And at the top of all of our screens, we also included the station name, that sort of sense of place of, I know I'm at this station is hopefully very obvious when you at least look at the screen. So it gives you just a little bit of, oh, I know where I'm at now in a larger world that maybe has a lot of similarity between each station. You mentioned outdoor stations and transfer stations. Those were some of our biggest hurdles and focus areas for the project. And in addition to all of that, there was a research study in tracking how people moved through the station. So that was run by one of the other firms as a part of this project. But that gave us a lot of really important insight into what was important to people, what they were looking at, and what they were currently using in the system. So the map was a big tool that we knew that folks immediately jumped to. It was one of maybe the only wayfinding tools that you would see on the digital screen. So we knew that was something we needed to not let go of, and we needed to build on it. But in that, we focused on a few of those different primary areas. So focusing on things like those really complex transfer stations, those outdoor stations where you're maybe going past just the rail system. And from there, we knew that we needed a system that had that flexibility, that could adapt to all of these different environments. The one, thankfully, consistent element in a lot of those things is the screen size. So we knew that was going to stay consistent. That was relatively set by the time we joined the project. I think prior to this effort, the screen ecosystem of WMATA had been updated pretty recently. So those were relatively up to date just in terms of the technology and placed where they wanted them to be in the station. So that's where the modular structure came from that we built. And it just something that could show up on all of those different screens, but could contain a lot of different things. So we gave it a very consistent element in that container, but the inside of that was very flexible.
When you think about that consistency of both the container and that flexibility, what were some of the considerations that you made?
We did want to consider a few different pieces within that. So one of the big decisions we made was giving the screens a black background instead of a white background. That helps from an accessibility standpoint. It's not this kind of bright light that you're staring into. The information jumps out, but the background is a little bit more receded, so it's easier on the eyes. But there's also an energy consideration there. So those are not as bright, so they use less energy. And that hopefully has some nice long-term benefits for the whole Washington area. And then the other piece that was this forward thinking or maybe aspirational hope for interactive screens. So that was an element that we had talked about as a part of this project, but there are a lot of considerations within that in making those fully accessible for folks who have different capabilities. That was something we hopefully laid a strong groundwork for the system to evolve to in the future.
I always tell my team that when we're designing systems that we need, not necessarily future-proof it, but in the future, someone is going to want to ask the question, how might we put ads on this thing? Or how might we monetize something, be it a physical space or a digital space? It's one of the shames of some of the digital signage in the New York City subway is that oftentimes the arrival countdown clocks, there'll be ads that have nothing to do with the arrival of my 7 train. It's like, come work for the MTA. And it's either a scrolling thing or something else. And it obscures the information that is most useful to me. How do we both channel those sort of inevitable future changes into a system that will end up changing on day 2 after it goes live?
All of those different areas that you talked about are realities of the world. Ads in a system like this are a guarantee. They fund these institutions and are a necessary piece. And we designed this project and really all of our projects with the thought that they will evolve, because we know that to be true, whether that's a signage system or a brand, or I guess books are pretty finite, but everything else is built to evolve. And that's why we always design with that same fundamental approach, really at the core of our thinking. This project, we had the luxury of pointing to the Vignelli work. Working with the essential tools, I think, allows any system to really live and breathe after you pass it off. You want it to evolve. You know, it shouldn't stay in that moment. And I think in this work and hopefully all of our work at Order, we really think about that handoff moment as a very small chapter in hopefully a very long life of these systems. And we want them to grow and change and evolve. And one of our favorite things to see is our clients take these systems and break them and let them evolve, do something new with it, think of a new way to adapt it. But the hope is that the core idea, the core system has been designed in a way that it allows for all of that. It keeps that room to breathe outside of it.
Oftentimes there's this tension between ideal idea that I think sometimes as a younger designer, I would fall victim to. But also if you believe in something, you think something works, you want it to come to life in the most idealized fashion. But also at the other end, making an extensible system that can grow and change, which can fundamentally grow with people because, you know, we're not static. We're constantly changing.
Yeah. And we build our guidelines and our handoff documents with those pillars in mind. We think about them a little bit like a recipe book, where here are all of these ingredients, here are the best ways that you can combine them, or at least the ways that we think that you could start with, but there's still a lot that you can continue to add to it. And we try to place just enough guardrails to hopefully not break the system completely, but to allow for at least some sort of experimentation to happen within those boxes and within those constraints.
I don't know about you, but as a designer, there's nothing worse than having what you do get printed out into a binder and just sat on a shelf. I've done some of those projects and I'm glad I'm getting the money. I'm glad I'm getting the experience, but that's a bummer when that happens.
Yeah, it is, but it does happen sometimes. I think the fate of our work is out of our hands a lot of the times, and you hope for the best and you want to see it live on, but sometimes it doesn't. And, you know, that's just the nature of it. We developed our system through a very intensive research process, and we developed the kind of basics of the toolkit. We passed that off to the WMATA team, who then built the kind of pilot stations and started to implement it. From there, they tested it, learned what worked, learned what didn't. But that, unfortunately, was the end of this phase of the project and our involvement of it. We have stayed in touch to varying degrees with them, so we do know that they are at least continuing to evolve and develop the work. But unfortunately, that's not something that we were, you know, super involved in.
Yeah, that's always tough. As a consultant, oftentimes, like, you do the thing and hopefully you hand it off as used, but it's oftentimes you're invested at the end of the project. You're like, oh, I really want to help. I really like, let's go and let's like do some more work together. And oftentimes it's either because they don't have the time, they don't have the money, or you've done your job and you've given them the thing and they can go do it. That just sometimes that doesn't work out.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that last point was really what this was for us. We felt like we had built really a strong foundation of a system for them, and we wanted them to take it from there and evolve it themselves. Our hope in some ways is to not be involved in a project anymore, which I guess kind of sounds backwards, but I think that hopefully and ideally speaks to the success of the work if we don't have to be involved, if we can pass off this system and you can continue to make things with it, make changes, and evolve it and set it free, I guess in some ways. That's maybe a tougher pill to swallow, but that is, I think, kind of best case scenario. I'm Garrett Corcoran. I'm a graphic designer based in Brooklyn, and I work as design director at a design office called Order.
Many thanks to Garrett for the great conversation. This has been Journey with Purpose, episode 31. Please do listen to episode 30 if you want to go in depth into Washington Metro's history. I learned a lot. I hope you really enjoy it. The next episode might be around the new Metro maps. I have a couple good interviews about it. I'm not really sure, really. There's a lot of different shows that we have in production. So I guess you will just have to smash that subscribe button on Apple Podcasts or Spotify or wherever you get your favorite podcast to be able to listen to what's next. All opinions heard today are not necessarily reflective of our clients' or employers' views. They are ours only. Please do go to jwp.news for more podcast episodes, pick up a pamphlet for sale, and to spread joy and love. We wish you the best and see you on the internets.